Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, Stare Down fans. This is a special episode for the U.S. Open, which is starting tomorrow. So we thought we'd get together with my usual cohorts, Bill Risser and Todd Meininger, and talk about the 118th U.S. Open, which is happening up at Erin Hills outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Good afternoon, boys. Welcome to Happy Hour on the eve of the U.S. Open. How are you?
I'm soaking wet. You know that it rains a lot in Florida? Just in thunder and lightning and stuff. It's really cool. Yeah. So I'm wet.
Did you catch an afternoon's cloudburst?
I did. It's great. It's very cool.
So you're starting to see now that you're a resident. The mornings are nice and you start seeing the thunderheads build up.
Yep.
You can kind of see them forming off the coast, right?
Yep.
And then they hit, you know.
And then they open up and you just don't wash your car very often if you live in Florida.
Yeah. You know, Todd and I spent many a summer in Gainesville and it was pretty much, you know, Gainesville's in the center of the state. Bill, you haven't been to Gainesville yet on one of your trips. So you get no beach breezes. And in the summertime, it is sweltering. So normally what the routine was in the summer times for us was wake up and shower and then go to your morning class. Come back, sit out in front of the fraternity house, catch some sun, maybe grab a shower before you go back to afternoon class. You'd then walk back from your afternoon class and it was so hot and humid, you'd usually need to shower again before you'd go out to dinner. And then back then you were still allowed to smoke in the bars. So before you'd go to bed, you'd have to shower again because of the cigarette smell. It was not unknown that you'd have 3 or 4 showers a day, let alone if you got caught in a cloudburst on the way back from class, which there was just nothing you could do. Right, Todd?
Yeah. Bill, the beauty of the Florida shower, if you will, is watching it roll in is pretty cool. And my memories are pretty short-lived. Not a lot of 2-day showers. Usually it comes in and it goes out. So, hey, Bill, since you've been in Florida first of the year, has that been your experience? The cool watching the storms come in and usually they're short-lived?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted this in Phoenix. We had the same thing with the monsoon. It just was very, not near as regular. I'm hearing from here that this is going to be like daily for the next 5 months where it's going to, there's a good chance. Every weather forecast the whole week, it just says 50% chance of showers. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, real quick, Bill, I grew up in the Miami area. I remember it raining in the front yard and being dry in the backyard. And
wow.
That's no lie. It was pretty cool.
I haven't seen that yet.
So, Bill, are you enjoying the wet heat? Are you enjoying the wet heat?
If you can only see me on the podcast. Dude, it's sticky, and I keep asking people, so this is how bad it gets, and everyone to a person says, nope, not yet.
Yeah. August is probably the worst.
Yeah, August and September are pretty sticky. So, yeah, so you got a few months of getting used to it. So, guys, let's talk about golf. You know, it's funny. We did our podcast, episode 61, on Sunday night, and there was so much to talk about with the NBA and with NHL and with baseball and college sports. We didn't even touch on golf, you know, coming out of the warm-up, the FedEx St. Jude's in Memphis. So we thought we'd do this special U.S. Open podcast, and it's one of my favorite tournaments to watch. You know, we talked about the Masters earlier this year, and the Masters is that one tournament that everyone knows the course. You know where the pin placements are going to be. You know the stories. You know the legends. You know the guys in the booth, you know, who's calling it Vern on 16. And, you know, but the U.S. Open is special, isn't it, Bill? The U.S. Open, tell me kind of what you think of when you think of U.S. Open and what it means to you in the game.
National championship. Anyone is allowed to enter. All comers are welcome. And it's the toughest test of golf that they play all year, every year. Yep. That's what I think.
All right. Todd, what do you, as a hacker, as a admitted hacker, what's your thoughts on the U.S. Open?
I like what Bill said. It's our national championship. It's the United States champion. I think of long roughs. I think of the course being an equalizer. I also, being an Atlanta boy, John Smoltz, very good scratch golfer in the amateur world, tried to qualify for the U.S. Open and was ridiculously far off pace. And he was well considered a really good golfer. And it just goes to show when you put the rubber to the road and have to play by the rules and get caught in the long rough, you can shoot 30 over, even though normally you shoot scratch.
Yeah, it is truly one of the events that you get to feel like the golfers are experiencing golf the way we do, right? They struggle. And really what it usually comes down to is every player in the 156 person field is going to have a bad break. And a lot of the best players tell you that they expect bad breaks. You know, it's kind of like Bill in match play. You expect your opponents to make the shot, no matter where they are on the course, you're going to expect the ball to go in. And I think the players that can best manage the bad breaks they're going to get and minimize their score, you know, where most amateurs get in trouble is they hit the ball in the woods or in the fairway bunker and they try and make this miraculous shot that they just don't have in their bag.
Yeah.
And they keep it in the woods. They hit it out of bounds. They keep it in the lip of the bunker. And now they start taking what could have been a bogey if they were smart and turn it into a triple or a quad. And the best players that we're going to see, whoever's going to raise that trophy probably will not make it through the week without a bogey, maybe a double bogey, maybe even another. They're just going to best manage their rounds of golf. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I was going to say the exact same thing. The winner will have a double or two and just figure out how to come back. It's just what it is. It's a total grind, a total test. The mental side's always tough in golf, and this just kind of amps it up to this level that they don't do on a weekly basis, right? So it's I love it. It's so much fun.
Hey, Sean, real quick. This is a USGA tournament as opposed to a PGA tournament.
That's correct.
As the average fan, other than, I believe, instead of all square, your level, there are certain terms that USGA incorporates as opposed to PGA. Real quick, what's the difference? Why is it a USGA tournament, not a PGA? Is it because it's open to the public and it's anyone can qualify?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, that's exactly it. And the PGA Tour is a private, you know,
professional, group tour. Okay.
Professional golf association. And the USGA is governed by the USGA rules. And there's really not that much different. PGA Tour adopts the USGA rules in most of their cases. The only thing that would change would be any local rules.
Correct.
In effect in certain areas. And that could have to do with, you know, roads or out of bounds in the property. You know, not very often is there out of bounds inside the property. Most of the time it's just around the perimeters of the course. But a lot of times some courses, like my home course that I play on, the driving range is kind of in the middle of three holes. And so some tournaments, they play the driving ranges out of bounds. Other times they play it as inbounds, which means if you hit the ball in the driving range, you have to go into the driving range and play it out of the driving range. But then local rules, like on the back of our driving range, we have a net that stops the ball from getting out into fairway number two of Scarlett course. Sometimes they'll say, if you are on the range, you get free relief from that. So little things like that, the local rules that I'm sure there will be local rules that the players starting tomorrow in Erin Hills will know. And if Bill, the one that comes to mind for me of a local rule is like at Whistling Straits.
Yeah.
Justin Johnson.
That every bunker there plays as a hazard or as a through the green, not as a hazard.
Every piece of dirt was basically determined to be a bunker, right? You couldn't, there was no defined little, they're very well defined in most golf courses, but there in that whole very link style setup, what looked like just a little dirt patch was yep. considered a hazard and you couldn't, you know.
Can't ground your club, right?
Can't ground your club. And
didn't DJ, that's what cost him a playoff, right?
He did, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the course. Erin Hills, it was, the course was built in 2006. It's northwest of Milwaukee. I heard on the Golf Channel, and I'm really just learning all my stats about this course from the Golf Channel and you know, what I've read online. I'm sure that you guys are the same because we haven't seen this course yet.
Longest course, right?
600 acre property, 310 acres of which are the golf course. So it's very expansive. Unlike a lot of the traditional, you know, this course kind of fits the mold of possibly a PGA course, but unlike the kind of the traditional U.S. Open course, the tree lined Marions, the Oakmonts, this is very much more like a Shinnecock Hills. Wide open, which people are saying could really favor that big hitter. You know, a lot of times the driver has been taken out of the hands when you go like to Olympic out in San Francisco, right?
Right.
So you want to say something about that?
Yeah, so the Olympic Club is nothing but off camber turns left and right. There's everything is placing the ball out to a spot and then taking your next shot. I think here at Erin Hills, what I keep hearing from everybody, and I really haven't seen the course, but. Well, I have seen the course. I've seen the weed whackers cutting down the fescue because a few people complained. We'll talk about that. But there are going to be there's times where the driver's taken out of the hand just because missing the fairway so penal, you have to put it in. So maybe you're hitting a hybrid or a three wood instead of a three iron, but you've got to make sure, because if you miss the fairway, you are not getting to the green, right? I mean, that's the toughest thing for the big hitters to kind of bring back in is, I know I can hit it this far, I know I can get it out there, but the penalty is so severe if you miss. And this course, it looks like they've let the natural, natural grasses and all those different things just grow crazy, which I love. The fairways are generous, and hit it in the fairway. That's the deal.
Yeah, they're calling it fescue. You know, it's not really called rough. There's a fairway. There's the intermediate cut of rough. There's a secondary cut of rough. And then there's the wild grasses, the native grasses, the fescue, which is just wispy and tall. And it's interesting because they talk about the wind up there that blows is what's going to really impact how they play some of these holes. And depending on how they set it up in the morning, based on the forecast for the day, could drastically impact it. If they play if they decide to play a hole long, you know, there's a couple holes where they have a 75 to 100 yard difference on the teeing grounds. If the USGA says, well, the forecast looks like it's going to be calm, let's play it long, and then the forecast changes, you could see a lot of difficulty in the length of the shot. I saw the course last year because I was at Oakmont for the US Open. Hole number 8 played anywhere from a 185 yard 7-iron to a 240 yard, three wood. For some of those guys.
Right.
And it completely changes when you walk off number 7 green. Okay, what do I need to do here now to truly, I think these guys are thinking pars. They're just not attacking the course except on certain spots once they get to the destination. Once they get to that third shot on a par 5, can they decide whether it's a go for it or not, right?
Right. So
what were you gonna
say? Sean, you travel a lot. I was in a hotel in Macon, and I guess it was a satellite dish, but I was trying to find anything, and it was like channel 97-2. So finally, it came to Fox Sports 1. I go, thank goodness, and I was getting ready, and they were doing a special on this course, so it was a blessing in disguise. Really interesting, if you want to do a little research, this guy had a vision, and he made it all the way until about 3-4 years ago and ran out of money and had to sell. And another guy who took over basically got it over the edge. But they developed this golf course with the intention of having a U.S. Open here. And I think it's like 17 years in the making. I think he said it opened in 06. But anyway, from what I understood is wide fairways, really wide fairways.
Yep.
They said, and you guys can talk on this quickly, but they said this is going to be a second shot golf course to determine a winner. So my novice mind tells me it's so wide, everyone's probably going to be, in the fairway and playing. It's going to be who can hit the second shot well. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yeah, everything I've seen from the guys, the people I really respect on the Golf Channel, you got your Frank Nabilo, you got David Duval. These guys are all talking about the fact that these players are really starting to pick up, even the first ones that have seen it for the first time this week. There are quite a couple greens that there's really only 2 or 3 spots they can put the flags. There's just a couple spots where they can't put the flag because it just would not be receivable by the ball coming in. So what you said, Todd, with it being wide fairways, now there's penalties if you go off those wide fairways, but it really takes a long course, and it opens up to some players that when we do our picks later, there's some players that you probably wouldn't pick on a long course, but because they're such good ball strikers and how they flight the ball with their irons, I think we're going to see a shot maker's course. And from everything I've read, the greens are absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, perfect greens, they're not going to get them too fast because if there's lots of slope on them, you saw what happened at Shinnecock, a few years ago, where they just become unputtable. So I think they'll manage those. But the question is good greens favor the great putter, or does it favor the good putter who can get great on good greens? Right. Bill, what are your thoughts on that? Because you take someone like a Spieth versus someone like a Bubba. Bubba's a good putter, but not a great putter.
Right.
Jordan's a great putter. Can you become greater, or is it easier to become good to great or great to greater?
I don't think the U.S. Open, I don't think it plays into that, getting from good to great. No matter how good the greens are, the USGA is going to make them a test. Yeah. They're going to still walk that fine line. I don't think they'll push it as far as they did at Shinnecock or Olympic Club back in, I remember that one in 99, but they're going to get close as they can. And so, my take there... All right. That's not me. Good. So
here's a dollar in the pot. Sorry.
That's right. So my take there is, it's going to favor the good putters, the great putters over the good putters. That's my thought. Yeah. But I also agree with you that, you know, the first guy that comes to mind is Zach Johnson. Not a long hitter, but dead accurate, really a straight driver. He'll have long second shots in there, but this could play into something where a grinder like Zach can have a good tournament. So
he's
set you up, or someone to take Zach because I don't like him personally. So
he's number 26 on my list, Sean. not to tip my hand a little bit. Real quick, Sean, two things I also heard about this course, and then we can get into the fun part. Apparently, it's the longest U.S. Open course ever in the history of the U.S. Open, 7,700 feet. Is that so, or yards?
Yeah, and I think the 18th hole can stretch to 670, I believe, 665 or something like that.
And they and Curtis Strange, I guess, who's now over at Fox because it was on Fox Sports 1, he was walking the course with Fowler and Justin Thomas and one other guy, I forget. But he's interviewing Fowler, and Fowler said the only thing that worries him is the bunkers. Apparently the bunkers are treacherous. Because it's so wide, I don't think he's as worried about the fescue. Around the greens is pretty forgiving, but the bunkers are
The bunkers, I think the thing that makes the bunkers, Frank Novello on the Golf Channel was doing a story this afternoon. The thing that makes them so interesting is they aren't created as a bunker. They're just basically the way the earth was. They just left it without grass on it. You know? So there's these little areas that's about the width of your sand wedge. And so if your ball happens to settle down in that little trough, you're not standing in the bunker. You're standing a foot, 3 feet above it. You've got massive slopes and faces. You've got jagged natural sides, you know, so there's no, I anticipate we'll probably see some sideways and some backwards bunker shots like you see a lot of times in the U.S. in the British Open,
right,
where you have those little small bunkers that fits basically a human being, but you can't go any direction. So Todd, it's going to be a huge thing because there's the natural greenside bunkers and the fairway bunkers, but then there's the off the hole bunkers that really add in some intrigue into the areas. And there's going to be probably, one of the caddies said there'll be probably more lost balls this week than any tournament in the history of U.S. Open. Lost balls. And you're talking about with marshals and with fans.
And cameras.
The ball's going to be buried down into that fescue, and they just won't be able to find it to identify it.
Right.
So, all right, boys, ready to have some fun?
Before you start, I'm going to – one last point. You ready?
Yes.
Kevin Na?
Did you know that there's coverage till 9 o'clock if you live on the East Coast?
Yes.
Wow.
Love it.
Found something good about sports on the East Coast.
Advantage East Coast.
Oh my gosh. It starts at 11 and it doesn't end till 9.
And really one of my favorite parts about the US Open is it traditionally ends on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's the one day where, you know, you kind of have permission to sit, drink some beers, watch some golf. My guess is we'll probably cook out, so I might be in and out on the grill, but we usually try and, you know, have something on the grill that, you know, is about when the players are on 14, 15, 16, and then we'll do our episode 62 of the stare down, you know, probably 15 minutes after the final putt.
So, that's great. So anyway, we'll throw that out there. I thought it's
Bill, wait till you get your first chance of there's not enough West Coast majors, but when they do the majors and it's prime time, it's the best.
It's fun.
It's the best when they're teeing off at, you know, 7:30, you know, on that last day. So,
wow.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. The first official U.S. Open stare down pool. We're going to do each player is going to pick 10 players. All right. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go in the order of our bowl championship winner. Bill is going to pick first. Then I will pick, then Todd. And we'll just go round robin.
Oh, I don't get to pick all 10. Then you pick 10.
No. We'll go reverse schoolyard. So it'll go Bill, Sean, Todd, Sean, Bill.
Okay? All right.
So Todd, you're going to get picks 3 and 4.
Let the record state, I think I won the tiebreaker for second place. However, I will give you the second.
All right.
Let's go deep in the vault. We need to go deep in the vault.
Here's what we're going
to
do. We're going to pick each 10 golfers. So all three of us, for those of you listening, we all have our roster of the 155 entrants. They still have Phil Mickelson on our list, who is not going to play because of his daughter's
high school. Are we sure he's not playing? Is the rain coming?
If there's a 4-hour delay, he's in.
He's in if there's a 4-hour rain delay.
They said the weather's been changing every day, so it looks like he's not going to play, but if there's a 4-hour delay, he'll be there.
Well, imagine the anxiety of that 150, the first alternate sitting out there waiting for
I read an article on him on Twitter. They named the guy and he's ready to go.
So. Oh yeah, he'll just it happens with injuries all the time. So yeah, he's just got to be ready to play. So.
Yep. He's on the course. I'm sure he'll be there just sitting all day waiting for a tee time. So we're going to go down the list and you know, I encourage my fellow co-hosts just to have your rosters ready, because this is much like the NFL draft. When your player comes off the board, you're going to have to go with the next best available. And so the way we're going to do it, guys, and make sure we say it on the recording, is we're going to take all 10 players and we're going to assign point values to how they finish. Now, if someone wins the thing, they get 1 point. And the goal, much like golf, is to have the lowest score possible. So if you get the first, second, and third finishers, you get 6 points for their finish.
What, do you have a calculator, Sean? That's pretty
good. Now, if your player misses the cut, we will assign that a player 100 points.
Oof.
Okay?
Penal.
So the goal is to have all 10 of your players make the cut. Now, the cut is a little different than the PGA cuts, and it is the 60 and ties. It's not – there's no 10-stroke within 10 strokes anymore.
Okay.
USGA changed that a couple years ago where it's not – top 60 plus ties and 10 strokes. So could make a big difference when someone, if somebody goes out and shoots two low scores in the first two rounds.
And right now I'll give anybody on the podcast that wants to bet with me 10 to 1 odds that none of us have 10 to make the cut.
Oh yeah.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
No bet.
Okay.
That'd good. Be tough.
Yeah.
I know. You know, we'll talk about the scores in a minute and what we think the winner's going to be. And also who is going to win, but that won't be part of this. All right. So Bill, you are up, and give us a second as we track this so we can make sure we have it for posterity reasons.
All right. I'm going to go chalk, and I'll take Dustin Johnson in the number one slot.
Shocker.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Make sure I'm getting this right order. So Dustin Johnson, the defending champ. Now, can you name me the last person to defend as US Open champion?
Curtis Strange.
I think we both got that. Yeah.
He won a second one at Oak Hill.
89 at 90 or something like that.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
All right. My first pick is going to be someone who has won a US Open before. Love his game. Jordan, I think he's got one of the best swings in the game, and that's Justin Rose.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Look at Sean. Todd's all giddy. He gets two guys he didn't think he'd get.
God, I was just going to say, Bill hit the jackpot, but I think I hit the jackpot.
Yes, wow. All right, Todd.
All right, Sean, with my third, my first and second selections, I will go with Jason Day. And I will also, God, there's one I really want to take, but logically I have to take Jordan Spieth, right?
Okay.
All right.
That's not a bad pick. You parlay Day and Spieth. That's
pretty good.
Two pretty good players right there.
Thank you.
And I'll say two pretty good guys.
Thank you for picking Rose, which was my seventh choice.
Oh, look at him. Oh, wow. So wow.
I'm taking people off the board as they go.
DJ was my second. So
it's funny. I had DJ as 18th.
Really?
Yeah.
excuse me, Bill, we may have to start over again. I think I heard Sean say he had DJ as 18th. What? Number one in the world.
Sure. 17 players. You 17 think players have a better better? Chance no. of winning the
no,
US
I just,
Open.
I just,
no. Do you think 17 other players have a better shot of winning the US
wow.
Open?
Wow. No, I did my picks thinking that they would be off the board. So.
All right, all right.
Woo. All right. Well, hey, you may be right.
Next up on my list, I think this guy is due. He's already had one win this year in a tournament that has a great field, is a tough, long course. I'm going to go with the Aussie Mark Leishman.
Oh, my God.
No, he's a great player. Look, in my fantasy league, I've already burned my three picks on him. He's good.
He did not make my top 30.
No, he didn't make mine either. But okay. I'm saying he's a good player.
Wow.
You may be on something.
Hey.
I'm going to go with
– I picked like Montana State in the bowl pool too. So,
all right. So then I'm – once again, I know Sean's throwing us off, but going with these, you know, gut picks more than the favorite picks. And I get it because that can be a winning strategy. But I don't know how sitting here with the 6 pick, how I don't take Rory McIlroy. Playing much better, hitting the ball straight. This is the kind of course he can dominate on. I mean, it's crazy that I think he was number six.
That's my five, Bill.
Yeah. Five. Yep. And then I'm going to, just because it's a Southern California thing and best player never won a major, let me throw Ricky Fowler on top of that as well.
That's my six. Two DJ, great
DJ
picks.
Fowler and McIlroy.
That's great.
My team so far.
That is great.
Sean, you're back up.
All right, hold on.
John just gets one pick every time. You and I get to go two. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, right? Okay, so the next on my board is a guy, once again, you guys are going to laugh at me, but he has always seemed to contend when it comes to big-name tournaments.
Francis, we met.
I'm going to go with Thomas Peters.
That's yes!
That is a good pick. That is a good pick.
Thomas Peters, a bomber.
Yep.
Lots of experience now with the Ryder Cup. And just a pick that I think is kind of a chic pick right now. He's a player that could step up.
Okay. I like it.
Todd.
Todd gets two.
Woo. I have to get myself off the floor, Sean. you're genius. You may be a genius. I'm pretty happy so far. I have Day, Spieth, and I'm going to go with Sergio for my next pick. Mm. He won the Masters. He's playing well. I think he played well at where was he at in Jacksonville?
TPC?
Yep. TPC, I think he played well. So I'm going with the hot hand. Gosh, now this is where it gets really interesting. Bill, I think you're going to love this pick. I think you're going to love that I'm going with Rahm as my
answer. ASU, go Devils. All right.
And this is my first a little kind of outside the box pick, a little bit.
Not much. He's a little bit. I think the odds makers like him, but
he's not chalky, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, Bill.
He's no Mark Leishman. I think it's you, Sean.
Yeah,
you're up for one.
All right. I'm going to go with a guy that once again, he's a big hitter. He wins on big courses. He's got a game that I think sets up for the U.S. Open, and I think because he's got the demeanor that won't get distracted by any outside forces, Hideki Matsuyama.
Good pick, Sean.
Yeah, he is a bull, huh?
Oh my gosh, just a big strong dude.
Yeah.
The courses he's won on have been, you know, Muirfield Village, and just a guy that I think plays well. So
I had him 11 on my list.
You got two coming, Bill.
I want to stick with another young gun who's, you never know, just could have that breakout moment. I'm going to go Justin Thomas.
Good pick.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
He was my 13.
10 for me. 10 for me.
And then my veteran, my grizzled veteran, it's hard to say that this guy's a grizzled veteran, but just stoic, Henrik Stenson.
Yeah, great pick again.
Yep, so.
Number 12.
Wow. Didn't even but he's just a grinder, very robotic.
Right.
All right. Next up on my best player available, and I say that with the U.S. Open in mind, not best player, but best player available. Boy, he was close at Chambers Bay. Mm-hmm. Brendan Grace out of South Africa.
Good one. I like him. Like him a lot.
I like his game. I like his fact that he's been there. He gave it away when he hit it on the railroad tracks in Chambers Bay. Didn't give it away, but he gave away a chance of being in the conversation with one bad swing, and I think he'll be back. So, Brendan Grace.
Sean, cool. I get two, right?
Yep.
What numbers are these for me? Am I 5, 6?
So, Todd, right now you have a total of 4 players on your team right now.
And, again, maybe my mistake is I'm maybe picking – looking at players versus U.S. Open, but I'm going to stick with my strategy so far. I'm going to go with Adam Scott next. And again, I'm not sure if that's a good U.S. Open pick, but he always seems to be in the mix. And I'm going to go I had a toss-up between a good local boy and a European. I'm going to go with European. I'm going Martin Keimer as my next pick.
Okay. Keimer's getting a lot of love on the international front.
Do we like those picks, gentlemen? Do we like those?
Well, yeah, I think Keimer's very
solid.
Both those guys are very two of the best swings in the game. And I think when you look at the pressure, you go back to, is their swing consistent? And those two guys, I think, are very consistent.
So still to this day, I tell people, if you want to see what Tiger swing looked like in 2003, go watch Adam Scott. Because he never changed it. He's still Tiger from 03. It's awesome.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So.
All right, Bill, next up.
I'll go if you want me to.
All right, no, I'm just going to go with the next player I have on my
list.
Bill
won't pick anyone that you're going to pick. So
I'm going to go with the next I'm going to go with the next player on my list, and he's one of the –
Frank Ngoblo?
One of the hot young guys that I think is probably on all three of your boards at least, and that's Kevin Kisner.
Oh, that was my
that was your secret one. Yeah,
that was a good. I almost picked him, but I was going to wait till 8, 9, 10.
Exactly,
Georgia Bulldog.
Great pick, Sean.
Playing well. Just really, this would be the time for him to make a name for himself ahead of a lot of other people who probably maybe are next on that list. But Kevin Kisner,
fantastic pick.
Two for me. I'm going to go with a guy in the comeback trail. Who can have an amazing week. He can put it all together. He's done it in the past. I'm going with the Duff.
God, that's
I want Jason Duffner. And
are you reading my mind, you boy?
And then we'll handcuff him with on this. That was my sixth. This is my seventh pick. Oh, it's tough. Brooks Koepka.
He was coming up soon on my board.
Yeah, so I'm going to go
with Brooks. I like Koepka a lot. You know, Koepka is a kind of player who is a long ball hitter, long ball, Florida State guy.
Yep.
Birdie maker. But is the U.S. Open the kind of course that you're just expecting to make birdies? You know, now, right. Once again, match play, love having Koepka on my team. You saw it in the Ryder Cup. You know, throw me a bunch of birdies up, and I don't care if you're X on the next hole.
We don't care, yep.
But boy, he's another guy who just, if he can just have a couple breaks go his way, good pick there, Bill. All right, I'm going to go up next on my board. I don't know why I like this guy. I just think, once again, that he's just a fan favorite. I'm going to go with Cooch.
God,
Cooch.
Three out of the last four.
Those are wow.
I didn't have a Koepka on my radar, but I had Cooch, I had Duff, and I had Kisner for sure. Or Kisner, I'm sorry.
Pilsner? I know what you're Pilsner,
thinking. Yeah. Lager's a good one, too. Oh, man. All right. So it's me again, right, Sean?
You up for two, Todd.
7 and 8, is this going to be?
Once again, this is the first official stare down U.S. Open draft.
All right. So I'm going to go young. I'm not really – maybe I should save this one.
save it.
Oh, my goodness. This is tough. All right. I'm going to go with Zach Johnson.
I sucked you into that. It worked. Nice.
I'm going to think his precision play and very consistent play is going to help him out. Not a big driver, not a big hitter.
Not a good hairline, but I mean, other than that, he's okay.
So. Yeah,
I don't know why. That's just kind of a gut pick. Then I'm also going to go. I'm going to go young, and I'm going to go Adam Hadwin is my next.
Oh,
pick. Okay. He was on my board. He was in my third level, but a really good player.
Didn't have him on mine. So that's but I like that pick.
I believe he'd be the first Canadian to hoist the.
I think you're right.
The cup.
Yep.
He's young, right? Second year, maybe. He's just played well.
Second year. Yeah. See him. Really good player. Really nice guy, too. Really nice guy.
Yep.
All right. So Hadwin's off the board. All right. Back to me. It sounds strange for me to be picking another Georgia Bulldog, but my dad did go to school there. Russell Henley is a guy I'm picking. He is just a guy who I think is just, once again, on that precipice of the next big thing. So Russell Henley's off the board with me.
I like that pick a lot, Sean. I was teetering with that one.
So I'm at the point now where I'm just trying to get guys that are regular cut-making machines that
will
finish in the top 30 and keep me out of the 100-point level.
That's most of my board.
Yeah, exactly. So my two picks here are both of going Euro. Well, I'm going Euro and South Africa.
So who stays in?
I'm not. I'm taking Schwartzel instead. Charles Schwartzel. And Lee Westwood.
I love it.
The machine in the majors, right?
So, yeah. Right. Well, and here's what I like about Westwood. Why Westwood made my board, Bill, is he's probably got, 60 U.S. Open rounds under his belt?
Oh, yeah, easily. No more than that.
I mean, 60 would be 20, cuts, 20 times. You know, no, that's
– 60 would be 15.
Six to be 15, yeah. So he's more than that, but just a guy who's been in the pressure.
Yep.
He's the kind of guy who doesn't mind making pars, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good pick.
He knows that if – almost in tennis, Bill, it's the unforced error.
Right.
Other people come back to you. If you just keep making pars, you're not losing ground, right?
Right.
Hey Sean, when you are cooking out on Sunday and Westwood wins and you're listening on your Sirius XM channel 206, you will hear "and Lee Westwood won" on Westwood One. There you go.
You're finally calling it. All right. Back to me. This guy might be early to go with now.
What number are you on, Sean?
Let's see. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Should have 7.
This is my eighth now.
Because I have 9, don't I? Already?
It's going to go Sean, me for 2, Sean 1, you 1, I guess.
Yeah,
Bill has 9.
And I have 8. Okay.
I might have mismarked one. I'll check at the end here.
Okay.
Because I'll know who I picked. I'm going to go with a guy who's won a major before. He's challenged in other majors before. And he's just a small but mighty machine. That's Louis Oosthuizen.
Yeah, yep. I knew that was coming. Yep.
Shrek
has a shot.
Yep. All right, you're up, Todd.
All right, this is tough. I got a lot of good names because Sean went deep in the vault.
Yes, he did.
I have a lot of good names on my top 30. I thought we'd all pick in the same 30 and it would be easy by now. But I still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players on my board. I'm going to go with experience. I'm going to go with former champions of the U.S. Open, I believe. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to go with Graham McDowell as one of my picks.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Webb Simpson as another pick.
Wow.
Both U.S. Open former champs, I believe, correct?
Yes.
And Simpson won at Oakland at Olympic, and McDowell won at Pebble Beach, so two California guys.
Yep.
Winning in California. But very good pick there. Simpson played strong in Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Played very strong in Texas. So
that's my 10 pick. That's pretty good.
Back to me, I'm going to go with a guy who has won a U.S. Open before, is not a long hitter, but is – easily one of the best ball strikers and thought guys on the golf course. That's Jim Furyk.
Wow, an older guy. Yeah. All right, so I'm wrapping up. This is my final pick. I'm excited he's still there. I got to go Devils and pick this Sun Devil. You know who I'm talking about.
Phil?
Paul Casey.
that was my next pick, Phil.
Paul Casey. Happy to get him at 10. Wow.
So right. for fun, Sean, on my board left, I have Stricker.
Well, hold on. I got to make sure we have our 10 guys.
You should be done, I think.
I should be, yeah. So I got to figure out who I'm missing. So hold on.
Ah, there you go.
Thomas Peters, yep. So we're good. All right. So once again, let's recap the teams. I'll read through who everybody has for posterity's sake on the recording. So Carpenter's going with not in any order.
Don't giggle, everyone.
Furyk, Grace, Henley, Kisner, Cooch, Leishman, Matsuyama, Oosthuizen, Peters, Rose. Right, that's my team. Very Euro-friendly. Bill has Casey, Duffner, Fowler, BJ, Koepka, McIlroy, Schwartzel, Thomas, and Westwood. And Miners team has Jason Day, Sergio Garcia, Adam Hadwin, Zach Johnson, Martin Keimer, Graham McDowell, John Rahm, Adam Scott, Webb Simpson, Jordan Spieth.
So, I like my team, boys.
I like mine. The only one I don't like is Sean's.
It's going to be interesting. Let's talk. So, Todd, give me a couple of your names that were next up if you would have had to go deeper on your board.
Okay, so I have Field. I was going to pick the Field as number 10, but I didn't do that. There. So I have Stricker, and this is 18, starting 18. I have Stricker. I have Snedeker, Brendan Steele, Haas, Jimmy Walker.
Okay.
Honorable mention, I had Bubba and Matt Fitzgerald.
Matt Fitzpatrick.
Oh, kid, yeah.
Fitzpatrick, I'm sorry, you're right. You're right, yeah, yep.
And Fitzpatrick, former U.S. amateur champion, played on the Ryder Cup team.
Yep.
He was on my board. He would have been the three more down if I would have got there. Liked the kid a lot. You know, been in the stage. Bill, who were some of your almost stuff?
Daniel Berger, just because he's hot, playing well. Yeah. And then the other one that I really kicked around was Kevin Chappell. I think he's got game. And so those are the two that I hope don't come back to bite me.
Yeah. So up on my board, I had Gary Woodland, mm-hmm. Big hitter, good ball striker, Chappell, Fitzpatrick, Jonathan Vegas.
Johnny V. Yeah, that's true.
Big hitter. And a name I'm just going to throw out there, guys, just so I can maybe say I said it, but Jordan Niebrugge.
Yeah. I was
listening to he's a, I believe he played at Illinois.
Yeah.
Played the course in the NCAAs or something.
Oh, he grew up in Wisconsin. So he knows the course. He's played it since it's been open.
Yeah.
So Snedeker. He's got a chance. Yeah.
Peter Uihlein is another kid who's played the course before in the US Amateur, as well as Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, JB Holmes. And then I had Stricker in there just as a fan favorite. I just think, so it's gonna be interesting. It'll be interesting to watch. I know I'm excited. I'll be working from home tomorrow to watch a lot of coverage. I think Fox is going to roll out probably some new things that we're going to enjoy.
I hope. They haven't been my favorite show.
I agree. And last year they were aided by a bad, you know, maybe a controversy on the ball moving on Sunday. But, you know, Azinger and you have Brad Faxon. I think he's doing a great job. And the lefty, Steve Flesch, will be on there. So it'll be interesting to see how they cover it. Guys, tell me give me your winner and what you think the score is going to be. Now, it's interesting because, Bill, you probably remember for a long time, getting to double digits was a magical thing in the U.S. Open. It was almost unheard of, and the USGA almost took it as an insult if players didn't, you know, they like to have a round par be right. The winner.
Right.
Do you know who the first golfer to ever get to double digits was in the U.S. Open?
Tiger?
In 2000, Tiger did. He finished at 12 under, won by 15.
I'm talking about just even get to that number.
Just like, get to it somewhere in the tournament.
Somewhere in the tournament. And I still remember it happening.
Huh. I don't know. You have to – who was
Dr. Gil Morgan.
Wow.
At Pebble Beach.
Wow.
In 1992 was the first.
He didn't win.
He did not win. No, Tom Kite ended up winning. Remember remember Tom Kite on hole number 7 at Pebble?
Yes.
110 yards, hit a 4-iron that
right.
day.
Right, yeah, the wind. That's yeah. awesome.
4-iron that day.
110 yards downhill.
Downhill, 4-iron. Yeah. To go on to win that, I believe, at +3. Yeah. But that was the same year Dr. Gil Morgan.
Wow, got it to 10.
First time. So Todd, let's start with you. Who do you think is your winner? Now, you picked first, and you went with
– No, I picked third.
I'm saying your first pick, though, Todd.
Yes, okay.
Your first pick was Jason Day?
Yes, sir.
So is that your winner, or did you have DJ or
Justin Rose? Justin Rose.
Why do you laugh at Justin Rose? Justin Rose has won a U.S. Open before. He's the gold medal champion.
I'm needling you a little, Sean. You're probably pretty smart in your picks. I have him 7th, so I don't think Justin's a bad pick. Maybe not at 1. I don't like him at 1. But I was lucky. My number 1, I have Justin Day on top of my sheet.
Jason Day.
I'm sorry, Justin Rose. Jason Day on the top of my sheet. And when it came to me at 30, he was still available. I had to jump all over him. So I have him winning. And I think the score is going to be a little lower than we might think. I have him winning at 9 under.
Ooh, that would be huge.
Wow.
All right, Bill?
Boy, I'm going to go with my heart.
With your number 1 pick?
No, I'm not. I'm going with my heart. I really am. Because, I mean, I think Johnson and McIlroy are huge, you know, potential to win. I'm going with Fowler, keeping it in the fairway, playing that game he plays, 4 under.
Well, okay. Well, I think I got to go with the horse I brought. I'm going to go with Rose in a shootout with Spieth. Guys, you realize it's been, I think, 20 years since we've had a Monday playoff?
In the USA. Oh, yeah, they play 18, don't they?
Yeah, they play 18 on Monday.
We had it in 2008, Tiger.
With Rocco Media?
Yeah, Rocco Media.
Oh, nine years.
I was there, so I remember.
Years. Okay, you're right. And then before that, I think it was Angel Cabrera and who would that have been? Montgomery and someone at.
Yeah. Wasn't Elves involved in that too?
Elves, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go with Rose, but boy, Spieth, I just think, is setting up well. Saw a cool video of him. You know, his sister is handicapped. Special needs, and they were kind of – she was chasing him on the fairway, and just kind of – he's just a feel-good kid.
Yeah, he is. He is.
And if you could get Spieth versus anybody coming down the stretch, it'll be interesting to see how that crowd reacts, because he's just a fan favorite. And certainly if it's Spieth versus Ricky, anyone like that, it could be fun.
Todd? I got Spieth. I had the 3rd and 4th pick. I took Spieth next. Bill, just briefly, and I'm just trying to understand, if you think Fowler's going to win, why didn't you pick him 1?
Oh, once again, in the 10-player pick, I'm just trying to get a whole bunch of guys that finish in the top 10, right? So,
okay.
And I think DJ's a lock for the top 10, and gotcha. I didn't want you to have him.
Now, Sean, if DJ was available, would Justin Rose still have been your first pick?
Yeah, I think it
was. Yes, because I'm telling you, I have DJ 18th.
18.
Oh, that's right. How do I forget that?
Yeah. Once again, if we go back and look through history, it'd be interesting to see how often the winner finished in the top five the next year. I mean, it's happened a few times with Tiger, Nicholas, Watson, some of the best of the game. And DJ, I think, he hasn't played well as of late. He played well early, just had a baby. We'll see. That could either be a huge story on Father's Day, or he could be home with his kid.
By the way, Paulina's Instagram account, that alone puts DJ number one. I know you both follow it. Don't even tell me you don't. Paulina Gretzky, all right, go get it.
That is funny. All right, hey guys, final thoughts. What are you most looking forward to watching? What's the story on Sunday night?
Are we doing long shot real quick or no?
Oh yeah. Pick a long shot. Maybe someone that wasn't even on your board. Someone as you look through that list, is there anyone that you think wouldn't surprise you if they're in the mix on Sunday? I'll start. I'm gonna throw a guy out there that I think is obviously playing well as of late, and he wouldn't surprise me, and that's Rafa Cabrera Bello. I just think he's that grinder. There's usually a Euro in the mix. This course sets up well, I think, for that well-traveled player who plays a lot of different styles and courses and wind conditions. So I'm going to go with Rafa Cabrera Bello.
I'll jump in, Sean. I loved your pick of Kistner, the UGA boy. I had him 17th on my board. I thought I'd be able to sneak in and pick him, but yeah, I love that pick. He's my dark horse to win it all.
Bill? No, I'll go with a hothead, Billy Horschel. Just lots of fire and determination and good player. Yeah.
For a long time. If you look through history, there's always been Lucas Glover, Steve Jones, Lee Jansen twice. Just guys that kind of step up and find a way to grind through and survive in this. And it's amazing when you look at someone like a Phil who's grinded almost to the title six times. So it's going to be fun, guys. For me, the story on Sunday is always that Father's Day. If it's a father, they'll tell the stories are coming up the 18th hole. And if it's a son, like a Spieth, whose dad will be on the sidelines watching. It's just the stories that they tell and the stories they weave. And I just think that between the Golf Channel and hopefully Fox does a great job of covering it. I know it's what it's like. I've been to 3 U.S. Opens in person, Congressional, Oakland Hills, and Oakmont last year. It is a special event. It's massive for the USGA and the marketing they do around it. So I'm just looking forward to a good finish. It's always nice when they finish on Sunday. And I'd like it to be, come down to the last hole. Being a par five, a long par five, it really could make a difference in how they play the hole.
Yeah, my hope on Sunday is that somebody wins it and not that somebody chokes it. So I don't want to see a 3-putt on 18, DJ. So I want to see someone do something heroic to win it. That's important.
Okay. Todd.
Yeah, Sean, you hit it on the head. It's a major that always seems to be on Father's Day. There's only 4 of them every year. It's a very unique major. Usually plays tough, and it's a test. And and the course is an equalizer. And for that 4 days, he's the best. He's our national champion. He's for a year and the best golfer that week. So always fun to watch and, again, reflect. And it's fun to have Father's Day kind of play into that.
Good. Well, hey, guys, this was fun. I enjoyed getting together for happy hour with you guys. I'd get together with you guys for happy hour any day of the week, whether we're on the web, on the podcast, or in person. So until next time, guys, which is just coming up 5 days from now on Sunday, Father's Day, we'll get together for our episode 62 of the Stare Down. Once again, check us out. We'll be tweeting all weekend long at Todd Meininger, at Bill Risser, at Sean Karp. And don't forget, Bill, what's the Twitter handle?
At Stare Down Cast.
At Stare Down Cast. Make sure you follow us, guys, and we'll follow you back, and we'd love to have you in the conversation. Talk to you later, guys.